And so I'm going to tell a little backstory because I appreciate Lynn stepping up for us for this meeting. Because I had you on my list of speakers I wanted, but my speaker fell through this week. And so what I did was, so I went to the meeting on Sunday night, and I saw Lynn. I said, great. So I go over to her, and I go, hey, Lynn, what do you got going on this coming Saturday? And she goes, are you asking me to speak? I'm like, yes, I am. And she looks at her calendar with me, and I love it because she clicks on Saturday, and it's open. And she goes, damn it. I love that. So I really appreciate it. It brings me a lot of pleasure to welcome Lynn from Santa Maria.
Thank you. My name is Lynn. I am an alcoholic. Hey, Lynn. And I am so grateful that he asked me. I've watched his sobriety, and I love him like a little brother. Okay, I haven't thought all week. You know, they always say you have three speeches, the one you do all week, the one you do, and then the one afterwards. Well, I should have said, no, should have said, or whatever. So I don't have to worry about that because I haven't thought all week. I've been extremely busy. Life is busy. Life is in session. Goods and bads, all that. And so I'm grateful for that today. I'm grateful to be clear-minded. And I'm just going to know a little bit about what my drinking was like. I basically started as a teenager. I don't even know when the first drink I know I got drunk and ran down the horse trail. I had horses. I was lucky enough to get a horse. My parents, my father was much older. My parents were actually much older. They both had been married prior. They'd lived in Michigan, and they moved out here when I was 6 months old. So it was like they were starting their geographic, a whole new life, and all their family, their other siblings were all back east. So I didn't know I was doing geographic from 6 months old. But what I found is that I found that I was a spoiled child. I was an only child. Growing up in elementary school, lived in a place called Hastings Ranch. They had Christmas time, all the streets decorated, every street decorated specific theme. And they used to actually take big trucks and make sleighs out of them and drive up and down in Hastings Ranch to see it. So Santa would come to your house, and, you know, I got Santa personally to my house. So, you know, I was very spoiled, and it probably had to do a lot with my parents' guilt of their previous children to marriage, you know. Of course, I didn't know that. I was enjoying every bit of it and being a brat. Yeah, I was lucky enough that through the situation of my father's drinking and the arguments my parents used to have, that one night it was one of those times when my parents had an argument and I'm sleeping in the middle of them because that will keep the argument mellow. And something was said about horses, and I said, well, I want a horse when I'm 13. And my dad said, you'll have it. And then, who knows, maybe I was 11. And then I was coming up my 13th birthday, and my mom said, you know, you promised her a horse. He said, no, I didn't. She said, yes, you did. So I got that horse. And when, for me, that was a dream come true, obviously. We moved from the Hastings Ranch area to Sierra Madre. During that time of Sierra Madre, that had been about fifth and sixth grade. That was in the middle 60s. Beautiful time. They used to have a park in Sierra Madre when it was well known for big love-ins. My cousins moved out from Michigan, so now all of a sudden I have cousins, I have families here. And my cousin, female cousin, was old enough to go there, so I'd been maybe 12-ish. And she was 16, so she was going to love-ins, and I was disappointed because I couldn't go over there. Parents wouldn't let me. Her older brother went to Vietnam, so now we have this Vietnam thing going on over here and love-ins going on over here. You know, my parents are trying to help me understand all of it. So I was kind of blessed in that way. Because of the 60s, I didn't go as far as what my cousin did. Because of what she was able to do in those days, she ended up in heroin and ended up dying over that. My cousin Bill, he re-enlisted a couple more times, and unfortunately, after Agent Orange, PTSD, he's had his challenges. So I've actually been the lucky one, you know. And I moved out of Sierra Madre, moved to Arcadia, because this was during the time of the busing. And in Pasadena, they were going to bus part of Pasadena, the blacks, over to our side and bus a bunch of us over to this side. And my father was, like I said, quite a bit older. So a little bit of an Archie Bunker there. And, you know, so they decided to move to Arcadia, which was basically an all-white town. And I did go to high school there, junior high and high school. Got the horse. The horse was my outlet because I could jump on the horse, ride down the street, block and a half, maybe not that, get on the horse trail and go either way. So when I would get in trouble, we'll go up to maybe about 15 now, and I would start getting in trouble because, of course, my girlfriends that I met, they had older brothers and they used to have a lot of parties. Well, in the 70s, the parties, they used to call them, it wasn't a block party, it was a, well, let's put it this way. One of the houses in Arcadia was having a party, and when the whole high school finds out, not only does Arcadia High show up, but El Mahdi High shows up, Monrovia High shows up, Pasadena, and by the end of the night, you now have a SWAT team jumping the walls. People are destroying this beautiful house that this person was having a party in, and we are now across the street watching the SWAT team, and one of our friends is like, "Watch this." And he takes a big giant bottle and he throws it into the windshield of a cop car. And I'm like, oh. So, you know, this is the kind of partying that people are doing, kind of their own reveling. I don't even know, maybe this was part of the, could have been around the time that the Watts and stuff was going on down there too. So, you know, you got a lot of rebel teenagers going on from the 60s now going to the 70s being, you know. Whatever his name was, Tom Jones. I remember my mom loved him. So, you know, it's now we're going into hip huggers and bell bottoms. I mean, you know, and the Beatles are coming. And so, you know, junior high is like, okay, all that excitement and Steppenwolf. I remember that record, you know, and my parents wouldn't let me listen to the music in the house. So I would have to go over to a friend's house and listen to the music. As high school proceeded on, now the drugs are getting a little more exciting. We used to get into different psychedelics, mushrooms, acid, things like that. And I could remember going to a friend's apartment and putting headphones on and just sitting there for hours listening to the same song over and over. You know, so, you know, it's just what's happening for me in high school is that I am not participating grade-wise. I am participating, I'm showing up to school because of my family, the way they are. They're pretty strict, you know. They're going to ground me. Yeah, well, I'll get on the horse and ride away. But, you know, I do go to school, but they're not real strict. They say all you have to do is at least get C's. So what do I do with that? That's all I get. You know, if I get a D, okay, I take that class over. I never tried to achieve to get a B or an A. It wasn't expected of me. I didn't have the desire. So, you know, getting through high school and that, I'm thinking, you know, I'm just an average student. You know, surprised myself when I got this last job this last year and as a school bus driver, and there's like six tests and a book this thick at the DMV that you've got to read and you've got to handle. And I was surprised how well I did. So, you know, maybe if I'd applied myself, as they always tell us, she has such great potential, you know, if I applied myself, maybe I could have done something, you know, but I didn't have the desire. So again, now I'm in high school and I'm having a great time with the friends, lots is going on, different types of parties, and my goal is I just want to get out of the house. I'm the only child, the parents are fighting. It's not someplace I want to be because I know out there there's a world that I should be part of. So my girlfriend, who was a straight A student, said, "You know, Lynn, all you have to do is go to summer school, night school, and you can get out a half year early." Great! You know, don't have to have A's, just get the credits. So that's what I did. I got out at 17, came up with this brilliant idea that I'll move to Arizona, geographic. Move to Arizona, go to this college, which was DeVry Institute of Technology. At that time, that was the only one on the West Coast. So I talked my parents into it, and they spend whatever money to get me into it. And I get over there, and there's only 2,000 students in the school. Fantastic. But I'm one of six girls out of these 2,000 students. So you can tell in 74, that's not computers was not really in yet. They were trying to train us to do that. But this was my goal to get over there because at 18, now I'm 17, at 18 you can drink legally. Cool, so I get over there. Just before my birthday, they changed the age to 19. Lovely, I'm stuck here, but of course there's always ways to find booze. Found a place, four bedroom house with three guys from the school. Got the master bedroom because I'm the girl. Party up. Guess what? They don't party like I do. I'm drinking daily because that's how my parents drank. That's what everybody did. From the moment I moved out of the house, I bought a six-pack of beer and thought, I'm on my own. And that's how it was basically for me then on. Because I always thought, at least this is how my family is, you drink daily beer, no big deal. It's like drinking soda pop. If you really want to party, now you bring out the hard stuff or the mixed drinks. And so to me, drinking beer was just normal. Well, you can figure about 6 months down the road, I haven't gone to class much, and I think I got a job at Coulter Cadillac being a chauffeur so that when people dropped off their Cadillacs, I could take them home or to the mall or whatever. Very short-lived. Back home in 6 months, Dad picked me up at the airport. His comment was, well, you did a really good job on that one, didn't you? You know, and I was like, you know, how true, how true. Well, lucky for me, they were going to Hawaii the next day. They jump on the plane, I pack up my stuff, and I find some place to move out of because I'm not going to move back with my parents. And get myself a nice little garage that's been turned into a kind of house. Thank God it was summertime because the shower was outside with a hose. You know, the furniture came from someplace, but it was a place to live. It had a stove, an oven, you know, basic things. Unfortunately, by this time, because now I've been drinking already in Arizona, and I'm a daily drinker, so I come back, I've got to find a fake ID. So I found my girlfriend who did IDs, got myself a fake ID. I stick baked potatoes in at night, go to the nearest bar, come home, baked potatoes all cooked, the center's cooked out because I've forgotten about it. These are the kind of things I would do, or go to pass out, go to sleep the next day, you know. Whatever it is, run the bathtub, let it run over, forgot, went to sleep. You know, things, behaviors, were not being good. You know, I'm gonna follow my mom's footsteps, going to accounting, got that job at the bookstore. Found myself waking up with a couple of the employees going, this is not working. You know, get that job over at the bank instead. Did that for a couple of years. Then my girlfriend that I met at the bar, she told me that there's grocery store work and it'd be really good for me. And that way I could do my own hours. Well, perfect. I like this. I can go in and work all night. Then I can get off and I can go work at the bar all day. What a perfect life. And this is what I did probably for the next 10 or 15 years. These are the kind of behavior I would do. It's just my life was, how do I make the money so that I could do what I want during the day? Well, after a few years behind that, I'm going, oh, wow, I've got almost 10 years. I'm vested. Maybe I'll make a retirement out of this until I figure out what I want to be. 30 years later, I'm retiring out of there going, now, what do I want to be? You know, I mean, my life was just show up, do what's in front. Show up, do what's in front. What brought me to Santa Barbara was my sister got in a car accident. She lived in Santa Barbara, and I had been living with a guy for quite a few years. We had been doing quite a few lines and items and a lot of alcohol, a lot of bar, working, but I don't even know what a savings account was. Didn't own a credit card. None of that stuff was important. And so I decided I'd come up and help my sister. She got in a very bad car accident. Decided I'd come up to Santa Barbara. Got my job to allow me to work, what was it, Monday through Wednesday, leave Wednesday night, come to Santa Barbara and stay till Sunday night. And her legs were crushed, so she was in a wheelchair. And I did this until I could get my job transferred to Santa Barbara. Well, I told my relationship, I'm going to go up there because hopefully in 6 months, through therapy and that, she might be able to walk again, and then I'll be back. Let me tell you, 6 months later, moving from LA to Santa Barbara, no. I decided after he came, or actually I went down to visit one day. They were doing stuff that I had never done before. They're all sitting around this table, and they're all doing some kind of smoking stuff and all this, and it's like scaring the hell out of me. And I thought I had seen the progression of his disease in the 6 months that I was gone. And I just decided, you know, I've got a new beginning up here. Let's try it. Even though I'm still doing bars, all that stuff, but at least I had moved away from one area and decided to go on to the another. Well, like I say, during that time, my sister and I are doing whatever. I get my job transferred up. Bars are all my life. I mean, it's always a second job, all that. Baseball game, my sister is now walking, thank God. Baseball game, we made a team. She hit the ball, I run for her, you know. And then I played outfield or something. But at least we got her involved, you know. She'd hit the ball. And, of course, it was a bar. And when the game was all over, we all went back to the bar, except my sister. See, she's kind of normie. I've had a couple of beers. I think I'll go home. So I went back to the bar, and as usual, moved on up to this guy sitting at the bar, and thought I'd talk to him a little bit and see how he is. And, you know, you get that look like, yeah, what do you want? You know, and it was like, oh, okay, I guess this guy doesn't want me here. Well, there's a guy sitting over at the table all by himself. Let's just mosey on up and sit down by him. So I did, and started a nice little conversation, and, you know, isn't it getting boring here? Let's go someplace else. So we do the bar hopping from one end of the town of Goleta all the way to the other end of town, and I find out by the end of the night he's living in a tent at El Cap. Well, God, it's 2 a.m. You don't want to have to ride a motorcycle back there. You just come on home with me, right? Don't worry about it. You can stay with me. Well, unfortunately, I get to work the next morning at probably 4 a.m, and I am so hungover. And I wasn't one that hid my alcoholism. Mm. You know, I would show it, and I'm telling somebody, God, I got some guy in my bed. I don't even know his name. I got to go back to him. Get off about noon. Went back home, all hungover. Take my clothes off, jump back in bed. He never left. So our relationship started from there. And so we joke about that quite a bit because, of course, he was willing to go back to El Cap, but, you know, no reason to do that. We live with my sister, her boyfriend, her son, and we all live in this 2-bedroom trailer in Goleta. We're cozy and happy here. We don't need to have you go live in El Cap. So, you know, he moved in with us, and that was the beginning of more partying. I think before that, I had got my drunk driving. I had moved to Santa Barbara. I was pretty upset because, see, in Arcadia, would have been the 80s, early 80s, they still, if you got pulled over, they would pull you out of the car, put you on the curb, and take the beers and put them on the curb next to you and make you sit there for a while as they stand over by the car so that all the people can drive by and see you. And if you're real lucky, it would be somebody you know so you could get really totally embarrassed because this would have been right by our Santa Anita racetrack on Huntington Drive. So, you know, they'd do things like that, take the beer away from you and tell you to go home. Well, I moved to Santa Barbara, and prior to meeting this man, I decided that I was going to go bar hopping after a morning of, Sunday morning brunch with my mom and my sister. And we probably ended at 1 o'clock, and as normal, my mom and my sister went home. I proceeded to got to go find the bars, and then by the time the night came, I had to go to the Cowboy Bar because, see, I might be with Cowboys this month, and next month I might be with the Bikers. I mean, I never knew. I did my own little geographics with groups, you know, because if you screw up over here, now you got to go to a new group over here. And so this particular night was the Cowboys. And, you know, did my drinking, decided this bouncer looked great. let's follow him home, or talk men to let me follow him home, whatever it might have been. And driving home, as soon as you pull out of that place, the cops are right across the street anyways. I know nothing about Santa Barbara, so I start following him home, and all of a sudden I notice in my rearview mirror, there's a cop behind me. Well, gosh, I don't want him to get pulled over. So what I'll do is I'll distract the officer from him, and he kept going, and I turned down the street. Well, stupid Lynn pulls in a dead-end street, has no clue, and the cop is following her, not him. So I pull over thinking, okay, now what do I do? What do I do? I'll pretend like I live here. And I'm in fear because it's like I'll be breaking and entering. But I walked up to the door, turned the door to please be open so I could walk in. It was locked. Okay, pretend like you're knocking. Officer sitting there with their window down just going, okay. Not working, she's not leaving. So I turn around, walk back, get in my car. She comes up, definitely been drinking all day, no food. You know, oh, forgot to mention that when I was in Arcadia, I used to go to a cop bar besides the bikers and whatever. And I remember one of the cops saying to me, you know, if you ever get pulled over, he goes, what you want to do is tell me you want to do a urine test. And I'm thinking, oh, well, thank you for the information. And I'm, why is he giving me this information? Didn't occur to me till later that he knew that in time it would happen to me. So, of course, I said to the officer, well, I want to do a urine test. I don't want to do a breathalyzer. She's like, okay, that's stupid. Okay, we'll do that. Jump in the car. We're going to go to the station. Well, I am so wasted that when I try to pee in the cup, I keep dropping it. Third time I've dropped it. Well, I know that if you don't do the test, you lose your license automatically. Now, I've got a sister that's got a lot of therapy and a lot of stuff going on, and she finally says, that's it. I give, no, please, let me try it one more. That's it. So, you know, I'm now here in the jail, and I remember looking at the cops, and I was being cooperative, I thought, and I said, this is very interesting to be on this side of the bars. And they go, oh, are you a policeman? And I said, no, I just hang out with the cops in Arcadia. And they go, oh, Arcadia cops are pussies. And I said, really? They probably think the same of you. Oops. Well, they were very kind to me. My report said, when I got my lawyer to save my license, it said, cooperative but evasive. Well, that was perfect for him because we went to the DMV, we had a fight. DMV guy just shook his head and said she can keep her license. I had such a great lawyer. It was just insane that to me, I was like, wait a minute. You guys have sheriffs, regular police, and highway patrols all doing in Santa Barbara. Nobody has a chance here. You know, so I was had. Okay, so I don't know. That's my drinking. So what ends up happening is we get to Arcadia. No, we live in Santa Barbara, and I had had my drunk driving. I had been to AA. I had done my 6 meetings, and I did all the variety of meetings that I could possibly do, and decided that, you know, if I ever need you guys, I'll know where to go, and proceeded to drink next probably 4 or 5 years. I don't remember exactly how long it was, but the next thing I know is that my husband and I are partying again. And one night, time to go to bed, and I reach over to give him a kiss goodnight. Instead, I bit his lip. Don't ask me why. I have no idea why I did it. And he's, damn, pushes me away, and I'm just hungover. So I go to work next day, and he calls me up, and he goes, what are you trying to do to me? He got to work. His lip was this fat. I had bit all the way through. He had to get 9 stitches in his lip. Well, I was like, oh, there's really a problem here. So I decided to go back to AA because now I'm thinking, all right, if I have that much anger in me and my alcoholism is getting that insane, there's a problem here and I need to do something about it. So I came and I think I hung out 2 or 3 months. And I might even have gotten a sponsor by name, but I got that resentment. Never fails. not work in a program, you get pissed off at somebody, you know, well, screw them. And I proceeded back to the bar, and my husband was like in shock. My boyfriend at the time was like in shock, you know, you sure you want a drink? Because he wasn't sober at this time. And I said, yes, I'm pissed. You know, hell with that person, whatever it was. I don't even remember. And remember walking in the bar, and the people in there were like, oh. And that's terrible. When you even got the people that you hang out with going, oh, Lynn, you're back, you know? And that was just so crushing. It was like, what? You're supposed to be inviting me back. And, you know, again, I don't know how long it was. It could have been 6 months. I don't know. But I had done other things in Arcadia when I was younger. I had done a lot of things that put me in positions that I should have been a lot more aware. I should have known how dangerous my life was, drinking, especially as a woman when you're out there going to bars by yourself. Just different things that can happen. But I'll tell you what happened was the last time for me is that it was a Saturday, I think, or Sunday. It was a weekend. I did my normal whatever, clean the house as fast as you can with the beer in your hand, you know, and got it done by 11, 12, maybe 1, and said, you know, I'm going to the bar. Because, see, I was a bar person. My husband's more, my boyfriend was more of a, you know, garage, you know, whatever, that kind of thing. But I would take off, and I want to go play pool, and I want to hang out with people. See, I like people. And then he sometime later joined me. Well, he joined me sometime later that evening, and I'm sure I didn't eat as usual. And I had drank all night, and I had partied. And as a matter of fact, this might even have been the night. I'm not sure, but I remember one night wanting to party like that, and you get so much alcohol in you, and you're like, oh, my God, I'm going to get sick. And I went to the bathroom. And I learned a new lesson. If you throw it all up, you feel better, and you can go back out and drink again. And it was like, wow, that's fantastic. So, you know, you start learning all these things. And it might have been that night. But all I know is that I had drank so much that night that when I got home, because I wanted to party, my brain was as awake as it is now. But my body was drunk, and I was pissed because I really was achieving a good drunk that night. I don't know why. I just wanted to party it up, and I thought, it's not working. Those AA people, you know, they talk that after a while, it doesn't work anymore, and that if you're lucky, you might get a spiritual awakening, and you might realize that you're wasting an awful lot of time, energy, and money, you know? I mean, and that's how it was for me that night, and I just went, I can't do this. And what's interesting is that my boyfriend at the time decided for whatever reason that he would try AA with me too. And we both came in here. And in Goleta at that time, they had the Triangle Club. And we were a bunch of crazy young people. And we all got together and we did so much together, softball games and the different things that I did drinking. And see, and that was what kept me here. Because there is things to do in AA. It wasn't like I just had to go to meetings and go home and figure out what I was going to do. You know, you guys gave me activity. There was conventions. There was things to do. So once I got into it this time, and I got some time behind me, you know, 6 months, whatever, went to Arcadia one night. Because see, if you're anything like me, for me to do an inventory, it was very uncomfortable to do it at home. Because there's always people around, and I want to feel like I have to hide it, or I just don't have time to myself. So what I did is I went to Arcadia, got a motel room. I told my husband, boyfriend at the time what I was going to do, is I got a motel room, and I sat there all night. And I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote, and I drove around. I went and saw my dad, who had passed away in 1978, went to his grave, and even though I was ahead of the game, I wasn't supposed to be doing step 9, I had written a letter. And I went to his grave, and I read it to him, cried, and it was like, okay, I've done what I'm supposed to do. I'm not feeling anything fantastic, but I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. Went back with my fourth step, went to my sponsor. We did a fifth, shared that I'd done that. She's like, okay, that's great, you know, because I had heard that in meetings. There's so many ways to do 9 steps. So if you're anything like me, you're going to jump ahead anyways. But, you know, you jump around trying to do the ones you think you could do. So I did those things, and after about a year of sobriety, somebody approached me and asked me if I wanted to do H&I. And that's hospitals and institutions when you go into the jails and you carry the message. And so I was going into the women's side. And so I'm participating, I'm doing step work, I'm doing that. And I'd have things, little awakenings, I would call them, aha moments, whatever would happen. And there was a meeting that I used to go to right from the beginning that was at 6:45 at a church, a Catholic church in Hollister. I think it was 6:45 in the morning because that's about the time I would get off work. And we had this guy named John, we called him Wheelchair John, wonder why. Mm-hmm. So he was in a wheelchair and I became friends with him and we went to his home. I went to his home one day to help him pick up whatever, do stuff around his house. And why John decided to kind of do part of his fifth step with me. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing whatever and he's telling me that unfortunately he had inappropriate actions with his stepdaughter and he felt really bad about it and uncomfortable and didn't know what he was going to do. And I'm saying, well, the good thing is if you stay sober, you don't have to do that again. You know, you can be able to do those amends, whatever, in the future, that kind of thing. While he's telling me this, I've got like this rage building up inside. I'm uncomfortable with it. Why is he telling me anyways? But just this rage is coming up inside. And, you know, tried to console him, finished cleaning the house, whatever. Got outside just going, what was that? And by the time I walked from his front door to my car, I literally stopped and raised my hands and went, I got it. I got it. And what had happened to me is that God had given an apology from my father through this man to me for doing the work that I needed to do, to going and apologizing for my behavior, just the things I did. I mean, I literally, this was one of the most amazing things. And all the anger, all the, I don't know, disappointment, whatever was there, literally left me from that moment on. I actually forgave him for being an alcoholic human being that never got recovery, that could have had it maybe if it was supposed to be. But it wasn't. I was supposed to get it. You know, I used to have dreams too. Well, this is when I'm really young. We would go to the VFW, and I was probably, I don't know, 7, 8 years old, and my aunt belonged to the VFW. And all the kids had to hang out downstairs. That's the family area and that. But if I had to talk to my parents, you could go upstairs, and I remember what the bar looked like. You'd go upstairs, and you'd walk around here, and the bar's all here, and I don't know if Mom sat at the bar that much. She might have been sitting with them, but I remember my dad sitting at the bar, and I would go and I'd talk to him. Well, for some reason, maybe from 7 till 12, 13, 14, 15 years old. I might even had one or twice. I had an occurring dream of the VFW, of my father sitting in the bar. Then all of a sudden I'd become my father and I'd be sitting at the bar and all the people are sitting with me. Then all of a sudden everybody would get up and walk away. Then all of a sudden they'd all turn around and they'd start coming and they'd start getting closer and louder and closer and louder. And then I'd wake up. And I used to think, what the hell is that all about? My interpretation to this day is that I became the alcoholic of my father. But why would I have known that at that age? I don't know. But it's just, that was a recurring dream I had my whole life. And I think it was when I finally shared that, one time sharing, that I've never had it again. But those are things that I would have that you know, you grow up and different situations happen and you wonder, why does that happen? Or, you know, what does that mean? I don't understand it. Dreams and things. So again, I get sober. Grateful I stayed sober. Had a good time with everybody. Started working steps, doing H&I. I remember the first time, it wasn't even my sponsor. Just somebody came up to me. They used to have the Gucci meeting. They called it a meeting with... They have hour and a half meetings down there, you know, where you actually have a break, you know, and coffee break, and they talk before and talk after and all that stuff. And somebody came up to me and said, Lynn, do you sponsor? And I went, not yet. Good. Well, I want you to meet your new sponsee. And it was like, hi, what do I do with this? And that was the beginning of doing a lousy sponsorship with her, but the beginning of a friendship with her, beginning of starting something else, beginning of doing my own steps over again, because when you're sponsoring with somebody else, you're sharing a little bit of yourself. So you get a chance to see yourself all over again. Just that kind of stuff is what's kept me in AA. Moving up to Santa Maria, my mom and her husband moved up. They moved up from Arcadia after my sister and I did. Then they moved up to Santa Maria. And my husband and I, that relationship I had for 7 years before I moved up to Santa Barbara, his grandfather used to collect a lot of stocks. And being that we were living together and taking care of his grandfather there for a while, I'm a person that takes care of people. Interesting. I really look at this pattern. Okay. So taking care of his grandfather, and he would give me some stocks, 10 shares or something. And I thought that was very nice, but it made me very uncomfortable. Because to me, I felt like I was being committed to this man who, you know, I wasn't committed to anything at that time of my life. And I was like, yeah, thank you. No, Poppy wants you to have them. Okay, well, I think I got 2 of them, so maybe 20 shares. I had taken those, not knowing anything about stocks, gave them to my mom. She put them in a safety deposit box. Well, all of a sudden, Laddie and I are growing up, and it's affordable to move to Santa Maria, not affordable to live in Santa Barbara. We pull the stocks out, and they're worth $20,000. So they had rolled over, split, all these different things that they did, which they don't do anymore, over those years. And so, you know, in a way, if I ever run into that guy, I doubt it, but if I ever do, I not only do I owe him my own amends, my apologies, but I owe him a thank you too, you know, because he helped us get a start. You know, I never thought I'd own a house. I remember one sponsor I had, she lived down in, what was that called? Montecito area, I think it was, and by the pole fields. And she took me to her house because she had just had a walk-in closet built in her house. And what's interesting is we walked in the house and she went, oh, wait a minute, let me turn off the alarm. Well, obviously it was off because she was already in it, but she was making sure I saw she had an alarm on her house. Interesting. So she's showing me her house and I'm like just going, oh, I said, that is so cool because I've never had a walk-in closet and you guys, you even have a house. I'll never have that. She says, you never know what will happen just staying sober. You don't know. Nobody knows. And, you know, again, these different things, and I'm not trying to say it's all material, but material does sometimes come with sobriety. By staying at a job one day at a time, showing up to AA one day at a time, you know, doing the best I can, which isn't always the best. You know, I have a strong personality in work and in AA. So, you know, I just do the best I can. I've got my mom now. She's 94 years old. We sold that wonderful house that we were able to buy. My parents, her husband and her sold their house. We bought a house together about 8 years ago. Longer than that. And her husband passed away in 2011, about 6 months after I retired from that job. And, you know, she's 94. I don't know. We may not always have this house. I don't know what my future holds. But I know that I've accomplished something I never thought I'd accomplish physically, you know, materialistically. I've accomplished a hole that's been filled within me. I feel a whole heck of a lot more comfortable around people. I sometimes get a little amazed for the people that are out there that treat me like I'm an average person, because I don't always feel like the average person out there. It was like, oh, okay, I fit in. All right, you know? It's like, okay, let's get a hold of this one. You know, it's just, I get amazed at times. I don't yell at the grocery store person. I don't get pissed at the lady behind the counter as much. I can remember my mom one time and she was in a bad mood. And people used to be, they get in a bad mood and I'd be like, what's your problem? You know? I mean, you're trying to ruin my day? You know, it'd be that kind of attitude. And instead, I look at her and go, oh, having a bad day? And, you know, they go, oh, yeah, a little bit. But it changed their attitude because I'm not like, what's your problem? You know, and that's how I used to be. It's like, don't you know who I am? Excuse me, somebody tell her who she is. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, it's crazy. I can fit most of the time in my own skin. And I'm grateful to be retired driving a school bus of high school kids that I get to actually make friends with. It's amazing. One of the girls got on. Well, I got a new route. First day on, she decided she didn't have her bus pass. I said, you can't ride. And she's got this bright blue hair, so she's easy to see. And she's like, oh, come on. I said, don't have a bus pass? Go to the office and get one. Two other people didn't either. I was going to let them all slide, but somebody got mouthy. So I kicked all three of them off. Got up, turned around to the whole bus, and I said, I'm really easy to get along with. But if you get mouthy, you're not going to get along with me. So I'm your new bus driver. This is how it is. Guess what? That blue-haired girl went and got her ID. The following day, she got on the bus. We became good friends. And that's usually the way it works. It's kind of like me when I was in high school and I got suspended. And so I said, okay, I did my truancy or whatever the thing is you do. I did it in the PE building. I used to get bored. I don't study. I got to sit in a PE building and study. So what I did is I went and I found the mops and I found the things and I hid them from the female janitor. You know? I was having fun. She couldn't find them. Guess what? The following year, I didn't have a lot of classes, so I'd go and hang out with her and she'd send me to the store and I'd go get candy bars and Cokes for us. You know? I mean, things like that. You know, you just do whatever and you end up with friends. You know, and in AA, I have a lot of crazy people similar to some of them that I drank with, some of them I partied with at the parties. But what it is now is we're all doing the same crazy attitude, warped sense of humor. You know, it's amazing our thinking and somebody that's not, and they just look at us and go, why do you think like that? Well, because we do. We have warped sense of humor, laugh at some of the weirdest things. And I'm grateful I'm here and with all of you. So thank you.